Our guest this hour is starting a good food revolution, and he wants you to join in. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Monday, May the 21st. We will welcome in the author of The Good Food Revolution, Growing Healthy Food, People, and Communities. Will Allen is our guest. He is also the CEO of Growing Power, an organization that develops community food systems based in Milwaukee. We welcome your questions for him at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We will talk about Will Allen's urban farming and his vision for changing our nation's most disadvantaged communities through food. He joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks very much for being with us. So why do we need a good food revolution?
Well, you know, our current food system doesn't work for any of us, not to mention the folks that live in all of these food deserts where they have very low access to any kind of really good food.
Yeah. Well, why don't they have access to good food in the food deserts?
Well, many years ago, retail grocery stores pulled out of many inner-city neighborhoods around the country, and Milwaukee is no exception. So now what's left are fast food operations and corner stores that have really pretty bad food. So you have to travel. Most of those folks have to travel sometimes many miles to be able to purchase food from a full-service retail grocery store.
So, yeah. And that's kind of hard to do if you don't have a car, too.
Absolutely. And, you know, in the neighborhood where we operate on Silver Spring Drive, where the largest housing project, you know, people have to travel 3.5 miles. And like you said, many of those people don't have cars. So consequently, they're eating really bad food. And with one out of every three people in America are obese today, and they predict by 2030, unless we do something about it, 42% of us overall will be obese. And the fact that, you know, one out of six kids go to bed every night in America without food. So we really do have a crisis when it comes to, a worldwide crisis, not just in Milwaukee or around the state of Wisconsin, but it's really a worldwide crisis that is causing a lot of problems. Yeah.
So how are you trying to change that with your Growing Power company?
Well, one of the things we're doing is developing farms and training people from all over the world how to grow food in their local communities by, you know, being proactive instead of waiting. Because if we wait around for somebody to come into these communities and bring healthy food, it's going to probably be a long, long wait. So what we're doing is developing urban farms and major cities and small towns around America, and really teaching people how to grow food in a different kind of way, more intensively, to be able to teach people how to grow food inside greenhouses and hoop houses and high tunnels to extend the growing season or grow year-round, because we need to eat this good food not only like 20 weeks out of the year when we can have outside production, but in these cold climates to be able to grow food year round.
So how are you growing food on this this plot in the inner city of Milwaukee?
Well, it's not just one plot. That's mm-hmm. where our international headquarters, our 3-acre farm there. We feed about 10,000 people. We have a retail store there. And we operate a co-op of about 300 farmers. So we have a lot of food coming into that community now, and we're able to feed about 10,000 people, not only from that community, but folks come for really healthy, sustainable food, food grown without chemicals, food that we should be eating because, you know, we have these three pillars of our health, and one of which is nutrition, the other two is stress management and exercise. And if we could get the nutritional piece met, we'd have healthier folks and healthier communities, because 2/3 of that of our health is predicated on eating healthy food. So if we can get that piece fixed,
let's talk a little how this all started. How did you How did you end up buying this plot in inner city Milwaukee and deciding to farm it?
Oh, gosh. Mm-hmm. We'd probably have to spend 20 hours.
That's a great story.
A short version. I grew up on a farm right outside of Washington, D.C. Both my parents were sharecroppers that migrated from South Carolina during the great African-American migration from the South for so-called better jobs. And, you know, sharecropping wasn't a very, wasn't a great profession to be in. It's probably a little a step ahead of slavery. So many African-Americans vacated the South for industrial jobs, and with that, many folks left behind their farming legacy roots, or whatever you want to call it, and really wanted to forget about growing food. And now we're starting to see the results of that, not passing on how to grow food. But I was fortunate, and my parents wanted myself and my brothers to learn about where our food came from. So we had a small farm in Maryland, right outside of Washington, D.C. So I grew up on a farm. I was kind of born into farming, you might want to say. So a lot of the things I do today are things that I learned at a very early age, and got away from it by going to college. I was a high school All-American basketball player out of the D.C. area with 100 scholarship offers. I wound up going to University of Miami, where I was the first African-American basketball player back in 1967. And my goals were to never farm again. I mean, most rural farm kids, you know, it's very hard work. I thought I was immature at the time. I thought all my friends was having a good time where I was anchored on the farm, and I had to always get my work done before I could go out and play ball, which I really loved to do. So I said, when I left at 18 to go to University of Miami in Florida, I said, never again will I do this farm work. So you probably should say, you never say never, because here I am today operating 23 farms.
Right. And it was there was an experience that you had in Europe when you were playing basketball that made you reconsider that never say never?
Yeah. I first played professional basketball here in the States, and then my last years I played in Belgium. And one of my Belgian teammates, his family had a farm, and one day they invited me out to help them plant potatoes. And I went out, and as soon as I touched the soil, and I recognized that they were doing pretty much the same things that we did back home, taking care of the land. You know, they were doing it organically. The soil was really rich, and you know, I guess I had a hidden passion that just came out, and from that point on, I wanted to start growing food again. So over in Europe, I got 25 chickens, and I started growing food in a small town there, and I would invite the other, Belgium's a very small country, so I knew all the other basketball players, Americans from the other teams, and I would invite them for Thanksgiving, go up to the Shape military base. I had a friend, and we'd go to the PX, get a couple turkeys, butterball turkeys, and we would have a big celebration because we were kind of anchored there. We couldn't come home because of the season, so we had a big celebration in Thanksgiving and Christmas at our house, and you know, they ate some of the vegetables that we grew and preserved and so forth. So here I was back doing the same things that my parents did in terms of growing food and passing it on to our family, extended family, and friends.
Yeah. Well, gosh, and congratulations in all your success. You are you really are a pioneer in this movement. I was talking to a guest who wrote a book about the vertical farm, and he was singing your praises because apparently you are trying to build the first vertical farm in the United States. Tell us what a vertical farm is.
Well, we're going to build. We already have pretty much started our capital campaign, and a vertical farm is really necessary because the fact that in many major cities there's not a large land mass like it is in the Midwest, in the industrial Midwest, where in Milwaukee we have a lot of vacant land. In Chicago, they have 77,000 vacant lots, 30 square miles of vacant land. Detroit has 169 square miles of land, and half of it's unoccupied. So we have this situation where in cities like New York and Boston and Vancouver and Tokyo, where we have to grow food in the air. We have to stack greenhouses on top of each other and grow these vertical farms. And, of course, there have been many architectural designs about these 50, 100-story buildings that will feed 50,000 or 100,000 people. But I think we have to quantify and really study how this would really work. So the idea would be to build one in Milwaukee at our national headquarters, a five-story vertical farm, because we need space. We have 110 employees now, and we need space. We don't have much office space, and we're going to have a nutritional and agricultural institute working with the local colleges and colleges all over the state of Wisconsin. So it's going to be a multi-use facility, about a 50,000 square foot building that will house the institute. It will house our employees and offices and classrooms and commercial teaching kitchen for our youth in the communities around Milwaukee and elsewhere. It'll be able to house about 400 people for conferences and trainings that we do throughout the year. But it'll be the first of its kind in the world, and we'll do a lot of research and study and pass on that information to folks that want to build these larger 50, 100-story buildings. But it's going to be necessary.
And you're also involved in a unique charter school in Madison. Tell us about how... What your role is with that school teaching children how to be urban farmers?
Yeah, on the south side, the Badger Rock School, which was Badger School, was a school that I think it was stopped maybe 15 years ago when Dane County owned the land, and we're working with the Center for Sustainable Communities, the organization that is doing the primary fundraising with us for that farm. It's going to be an agricultural curriculum school, a charter school, Madison Public Charter School. It'll have greenhouses. It'll be a community school. It's already started off campus. The students, it'll be a middle school. The students are moving in to the school upcoming 2013 school year. And again, this will be a project that can be replicated around the country. We're working on curriculum, developing curriculum, something that we've always done with the teachers at the school, and it'll have exterior gardens. Also, the community center will be anchored in the school. So it'll be a community center, charter school, have community gardens for that area, because the south, when you think of Madison, you don't think of Madison having a lot of food deserts and so forth. But the south side, and particularly in that area, there's really no healthy food to speak of. So,
well, what is your ultimate vision, Will Allen?
Well, my vision is to really quantify a lot of things because, like I said, our food system doesn't work around the world. We have more hungry people than ever before in our industrial food system, which promised to end hunger and make us healthy, is help create this situation. I'm not going to demagogue industrial food, but I think we need to give people choices. When you walk into a retail grocery store, it should be a locally grown section, because that's what it used to be. Every state used to produce the majority of their food, but today you take a city like Milwaukee or Chicago, less than 1% of the food is locally grown. So if we can go from less than 1% over the next several years to create infrastructure to bring that number up to about 10%, that's a huge change. Millions of dollars will stay in the community. It'll create thousands of jobs, hundreds of different categories of jobs, because these new farms will have many job opportunities that are not just folks putting planting a plant in the ground. We need renewable energy. We need engineers and architects and every aspect of our job jobs that will be available. We need carpenters and plumbers, and we need truck drivers. We need planners, and it just goes on and on. One day I sat down and I came up with over 100 different job categories that will be necessary to grow food locally, because that's what we really need. Mm-hmm. We need to get back. So what we need to do, what we're doing here in Milwaukee, our organization, is we plan to have over 100 acres of year-round production in greenhouses and be able to grow outside and on farms on the fringe of the city. We have 23 farms. I just signed up 3 more farms last week in the city, spaces that will turn into farms. We're building greenhouses every day. We have a construction crew that goes out every day, and we're constructing the infrastructure to be able to do this, which will put a lot of people to work, because that is part of what we really need. We really need to put people to work. And folks that have been out of work, folks that have been bad luck, many of the folks that we're hiring may have had been incarcerated at one point in their life, but is leading a good life and they need a job. So we're really looking at the entire community to hire folks from the entire community with different types of skill sets.
Our guest is Will Allen. He is CEO of Growing Power, an organization that develops community food systems based in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. He is also a MacArthur Fellow and an urban farmer. And he is the author of The Good Food Revolution, Growing Healthy Food, People, and Communities. And we welcome your thoughts and questions for him about this at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Will Allen has a reading and a talk scheduled for Monday, June 18th at the Oconomowoc Arts Center at 7 p.m. One of his public appearances for his book, The Good Food Revolution. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Coming up tomorrow at this time, it's another edition of On Your Money. Financial planner Kevin McKinley will answer your personal finance questions. Coming up tomorrow at this time, we are talking about the Good Food Revolution with Will Allen, who is an urban farmer, and he's also the CEO of Growing Power in Wisconsin. And we're welcoming your thoughts and questions about the Good Food Revolution and his vision for changing our nation's most disadvantaged communities through food. What would you like to see happen in a Good Food Revolution? Are you a farmer or an urban farmer? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Let's take Buck in Johnson Creek first. Hello, Buck.
Good morning. I wanted to bring to your attention something we as a group have done, Sustain Jefferson, and it is to take your process and expand upon it. And where you compost your materials from cafeterias and that, we were going to add it into anaerobic digestion and try to create an energy positive system. And we're now in our second year of making another larger anaerobic digester that hopefully we can take a school cafeteria, take their waste, create heat and energy for the school while growing vegetables for the school.
What do you think of that, Will Allen?
That's a great idea. We actually have a high solid anaerobic digester that we did research on working with the University of Wisconsin Green Bay Microbiology Department. And what we wanted to do is be able to take solid food waste and grind it into a slurry. And we have a 80,000 pound tank that holds about 30,000 pounds of this slurry food waste, and we turn it into acetic acid, then change the microbial makeup of that acetic acid to be able to take that acetic acid and put it into a methane digester and scrub the methane clean and run a generator to generate electricity. And, of course, like you said, use the heat off of that to possibly heat greenhouses. So that's some of the work that we're doing, plan to do in Milwaukee. We're looking for a site to do that in Milwaukee, and also we're working on that in Chicago as well. We have 7 farms in the city of Chicago.
Wow. Thank you so much, Buck, for the call. That growing power means a whole lot of different things, doesn't it?
Yeah, it has a lot of tentacles. You know?
Yeah, because you're growing the vegetables, you're growing your own energy, and growing power of the communities, too, in terms of economic power.
Right. I mean, the first thing you have to do when you work in these communities is engage the community to get the community on board, because you're doing things like composting and like the caller said, anaerobic digestion, things like that. You have to really educate the community and get them on board so that you're looked at as an asset to the community. And of course, to grow healthy food, and any farmer will tell you this, you have to have healthy soil. So the thing that we do is we grow soil. If we're not able to scale up growing compost, we won't be able to scale up the amount of food because our soil is contaminated. When you look at our rural communities using as much herbicides and pesticides and GMO-type farming in our suburban areas, spraying lawns, and we're in these high industrial former industrial cities with lead and arsenic and all the other bad guys in the soil. We can't grow in the existing soil. We don't have any digging equipment, so we grow soil to put at least 2 feet of new soil on top of the existing soil or on top of asphalt, concrete, or rooftops to be able to grow this healthy food. And then we also use worms, worm fertilizer, worm castings, to be able to replace the lost fertility in the soil. So you have to have a system to be able to grow this natural, organic, or however you want to label it, food.
Well, Jerome on Facebook says, Grow to Share in River Falls follows this model. We opened our community garden for the public to learn about eating and growing their local healthy food choices. Nearly all of what we grow goes into the food pantry in town and other need-based organizations. I'm wondering if you're seeing a lot of other communities like River Falls following your growing power model.
Yeah, we train over the years. We've had these hands-on trainings that we've been doing since 2000. We do them from January through June, and then we take a break, and then we'll start in the fall. But we've trained thousands of farmers. We train over 1,000 farmers each year in organizations. And one of the things that I've seen evolve is the fact that many of the emergency food programs are now using healthier food instead of canned, high-sugar, high-salt, shelf-stable foods. They're putting healthy food and growing healthy food. So that's a wonderful change because that's what we should be doing. And we donate a lot of our food to pantries and meal programs. And that's important because whenever you donate or volunteer, you get twice back for what you give. So it really gives you a great feeling and kind of a spiritual kind of thing that helps energize you to continue to do this work. Because growing food is, I always tell people I was a professional athlete, and being a farmer is much more demanding and harder to do than being a professional athlete.
That's amazing. Now, what about the cost of this healthy, good, organic food? We often hear that it carries a heftier price tag, and what about not being able to afford that, especially if you're living in an inner city?
Not necessarily, because the food that we're getting, most of the organic food that's eaten in this country is shipped from far away. So you have those travel dollars attached to it, and, you know, you got a little bit of artificial inflation to that. But if you're able to grow your own energy, which we use a lot of renewable energy, solar panels we have on our national headquarters, and we're adding more off-the-grid kinds of systems to be able to do our aquaponics to raise fish, because that's another thing that we do, and working with the Great Lakes Institute in Milwaukee with Fred Binkowski and his group and the new dean that we have there. It's important to be able to reduce the cost of production. That's what That's what farming is all about. If you can reduce the cost of production and being able to grow your own soil, to be able to do that, we have our own trucking to be able to move that food around the city and into Chicago and around the state of Wisconsin. So the whole thing that I always look at is trying to reduce the cost of production.
Our next caller is Ray in Milwaukee. Hello, Ray.
Hello to you and Will. Will, you're one of my heroes. And I have to say, after the last 10 or 12 years in this country, I was becoming very depressed with everything I was seeing our governments do and corporations do. And I lived on a farm in North Carolina when I was 12 and 13 years old. And the main crop around there at that time was tobacco. And you talk about a filthy plant, the pesticides they were putting on it, and the amount of effort that went into growing it around where we lived. And we also lived in the food desert there in North Carolina. But poor folks around us all had chickens under the house, and they all had a garden. So even though we were living in food deserts, we still had organic eggs to eat, organic chickens, and we had stuff from Aunt Ceci's garden that she had been growing on that land for 80 years, and she knew how to grow these plants. You know, they were medicinal, and they had all these other great properties. Now, I wanted to ask about what's going on in Detroit, where they're taking over abandoned properties that they're actually just putting gardens in, you know, like you said, put in two foot of good topsoil on top of the bad topsoil. But there's also ways of growing plants for a couple years in these bad areas and rejuvenating this bad soil and pulling out the heavy metals. And what would you think about Milwaukee or Madison having yard chickens, you know, so that people in the inner city could at least get their eggs in the morning the way we used to? We'd send the youngest one in the family out to have the greatest time of their lives. They would go find eggs in the morning, and we would eat these free organic eggs. And please, could somebody like you or yourself run for governor next time?
All right. You want to run for governor,
okay.
Will Allen?
No. I don't want to run for governor. I can think be more effective doing what I'm doing. And, you know, we're fortunate in Milwaukee to have food policies by our politicos to be able to do things like have chickens and same thing in Madison and bees and so forth. So these models are now being replicated around the country and changing policy. I know I was in Boston. The mayor of Boston invited me along with their zoning department because they had no agricultural zoning in the city of Boston. So now they're working on being able to grow food in commercial, residential, and industrial areas just like we have here in Milwaukee. So you're getting those policies changed is a very important thing. One of the things that is happening here in our area, we launched a program called 20,000 Backyard Gardens, and that's why I'm glad Ray brought this up, because that is the first line of defense, that people can grow food in their backyard, side yards, front yards. I'm starting to see people get rid of grass and on their balconies grow a percentage of their food. They might not be able to grow all of their food, but if they can grow a percentage of their food, healthy food, and do it in a safe way, we can't really dig down into the soil and try to remediate the soil or remove it. The expense is tremendous, and the method that we use of putting 24 inches of new soil, EPA really likes that process. The root, micro root fibers stay within that 24-inch zone, and you can grow healthy food without picking up any of the toxins. And it, the remediation starts to happening underneath that compost tea and so forth leaches into the existing soil. So that is probably the cheapest, most effective way of getting a garden started. So we have this wonderful program that we're launching, and it's not just for folks that can afford the soil. We've had corporations like Kohl's Corporation that have donated funding to be able to install these 10 by 10, 10 by 15, and 10 by 20 gardens in low-income for low-income families that own their own homes. And every 10 of these installations, we donate one free garden with the with the compost. This year, we'll compost 40 million pounds of food and carbon residue at our large-scale composting site on the south side of Milwaukee.
Thanks, Ray, for the call. Mark in Richland Center is with us next. Hello, Mark.
Good morning, Will. It's good to talk to you again. I'm really proud of the work that this man does, and I would like to encourage everybody to sign up for a workshop. Go to the workshops that he conducts in the wintertime. The farmers aren't working. They're at his workshops, and this man has trained people from all over the country and all over the world. They come to these workshops in Milwaukee. I just wanted to reiterate what has been said by others about the economics of growing your own food, because the model of how much does food cost is completely misunderstood if you think that food only comes from the store. So the last caller and Will's childhood days of growing your own food on your own farm, that economic model is so totally valid today that all of these community gardens are going to be from the garden to the table, or from the garden to can it, put it on the shelf, and then put it on the table some other time. But you're not going to go to the store. So it's a tremendously powerful system that this man is part of. And this whole urban food movement is a restoration of an economic model that actually represents a fair portion of everybody's life. The dollars that are currently spent on food don't necessarily even have to be done that way.
Thank you very much, Mark. And I take it you agree, Will Allen.
Yeah, I agree with Mark for sure. And he's also one of the folks, the energy pioneers in America.
Well, we are talking with Will Allen. He is author of The Good Food Revolution, Growing Healthy Food, People, and Communities. And we're talking about how he is doing that through Growing Power. He is the CEO of Growing Power, an organization that develops community food systems that's based in Milwaukee. 1-800-642-1234. If you have a question or a thought about what you would like to see happen in a good food revolution, maybe you're a part of this good food revolution. How so? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, hoping you'll stay tuned. Kathleen Dunn is with you coming up after 10 this morning. Kathleen will talk with Anna Quinlan about her new memoir. That's coming up after 10. Seems to me, I talked to Anna Quinlan some years ago about her advice for college graduates, or high school graduates for that matter, and it was a very interesting program. And I understand, Will Allen, that you spoke to the University of Wisconsin graduates yesterday at the commencement ceremony there yesterday. What advice did you have for the class of 2012?
Well, it's pretty much the same message I always talk about, is food and their health, in terms of these young people who I think will take the work that we're doing, this next generation who I believe in so much, because we've had so many volunteers from the University of Wisconsin, University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee, come to Growing Power and help us over the years, thousands of young people. And my message was to really know where your food comes from, eat healthy food, because their health is going to be really important as they move forward in their young lives, and get involved and volunteer. Develop your skill sets, whether it's with growing food or whatever. The more volunteerism that you do, the more you're going to learn. And the fact that you're going to get back twice what you give. So those are some of the messages I gave those graduates yesterday in my commencement speech. And I had an opportunity to do last week a commencement speech at my alma mater, University of Miami. Our president, Donna Shalala, who used to be the president of University of Wisconsin, chancellor of University of Wisconsin, invited me to do the commencement speech there last week. And pretty much the same message I gave those students they have this great opportunity. And the good news around the food system is that over 75% of the folks that want to be in the good food revolution that has moved from a movement to a revolution around the country and around the world are under 40 years of age. So it's not, you know, 10 years ago, you'd say it was the opposite mm-hmm. in terms of crusty old farmers like me that academics that were studying the food system. But now it's these young people that want to be involved in some way or another, and we have to pass on, the folks that have been in this for a long time have to pass it on to the next generation. And so that's what I'm spending my time through a succession kind of thing at Growing Power, is to pass on what I've learned to the next generation. And they're going to really, change the health of our country, because right now it's unsustainable. We've got so many sick people, and I talk to medical folks in hospitals all the time, and they are now understanding. Doctors understanding that we have to do more preventative. Measures, and probably the number one preventative piece is our nutrition.
Right. Well, those youngsters seem to get it. You also say that the farmers of our future will not be coming from rural areas. They're going to be coming from the cities.
Yeah, this revolution, we're seeing all of these thousands of youth gardens around the country and nonprofits that have been doing this work for a long time. These young people want to farm, but they want to farm in a different kind of way than maybe my grandmother, grandfather, father, mother farmed. They want to do it in the cities. They want to live. More people around the world live in cities now than in rural areas. So people are migrating to cities. So we have to figure out how we're going to be able to feed all of this emerging population around the world. When you think about some of the countries and the growth rates of our population, it's unsustainable. We'd be shipping food from far away. We can't afford to do that. So these young people are going to come up with the answers of how to build these vertical farms and how to do it in a different way, more intensive, natural way to get food. Fish farming is going to be one of the really big deals. Because right now, 50% of our fish come from farms, and that's going to go to about 75% in the next 5 years because of what we've done to the environment and the oceans and streams and rivers and what's happened in the Gulf and Japan and so forth. So we're in a situation where we're going to have to figure out ways how to grow fish on these fish farms, especially here in the Midwest with our yellow perch situation.
Oh, yeah.
Where we can't commercially fish farm anymore in the Great Lakes. So, and that's one of the favorite fish of Wisconsinites. And we have this great opportunity, and we're lucky because we have the Great Lakes Institute with Fred Binkowski and his group at the Institute. Who are really helping all of the fish farmers and participating with us in a research project to figure out how to raise enough fingerlings for all the different programs and that want to grow fish and all the startup businesses that want to get into this raising fish.
We want our fish for those Friday nights. What about you were going to raise some humongous tasty fish in these fish farms. What was that?
Yeah, we're raising lake perch with the Great Lakes Institute's help. We've been raising tilapia for the last 15 years, but we're also embarking on some research with another fish called black pacu. It's a fish that gets up to about 60 pounds from the Amazon, and they eat only vegetables, nuts, and the fruit. So they affix omega-3 fatty acids in their meat, so they're really healthy for us. And of course, our tilapia, we feed them vegetation, so same thing. They're really healthy versus stuff that's shipped in from China or South America. So growing fish locally is going to be a really important thing for all the major cities. And folks are coming out in droves to learn how to build low-cost systems, or if they want to do it on a larger scale, commercial scale, learn how to do it in different types of systems. So that's the research we'll be doing at Growing Power with the Great Lakes Institute over the next couple of years to answer things that have never been answered.
Is this something that it could be done at a community level, but is this something I could have in my own backyard, a fish farm?
Oh, absolutely. Oh. People can raise systems of all sizes, and that's what we've been doing for years is building all different sizes, from very small sizes, the 750 gallon systems, to systems that we have at growing power, 10,000 gallon systems to raise 10,000 fish. So, but we're going to do this research, and it's important. At the same time, we're not just going to stop raising fish. We're going to continue to raise fish for the community and train people how to do it. But this research is going to be very important.
Sarah in River Falls is with us. Hello, Sarah.
Hi. So glad to talk to you, Will, because I saw him years ago on Outdoor Wisconsin, I believe. And you were on that, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, and was so excited to see that. I'm an agronomy major and have been just not at all happy to see where agriculture is going. And you bring a breath of fresh air into this, so very happy to have you doing this today. My question was, what would be the cost of, you know, setting up something small on a, let's say if you have several acres on a hobby farm or something, do you know what, you know, being up north here, as far as energy and getting something started like that, if somebody were interested in doing that, do you have a rough estimate as to what the cost would be to start up something like that?
Well, you know, I'm kind of partial to putting up high tunnels or hoop houses because of our climate, and you can extend the season and get stuff started very early in the season. We'll have tomatoes within the next month, and we planted them several weeks ago. So if we tried to do this outside, of course, with the fluctuating temperatures and the wind and everything, it'd be very difficult. The further north you go in Wisconsin, it's even harder. So to put up a 96 by 20 hoop house is about $3,500. And, of course, you have to put the soil in there, or if you're in a rural area, you have some decent soil. But that's about the startup cost to put up a hoop house to get started and really learn how to grow intensively, because you can produce a lot in a 96 by 20 hoop house, because we build those from scratch, from straight pipe. We have a bender that bends the pipe and so forth. So we save about 50% of the cost if you had to buy it from a company that provides that kind of material. One of the ways of really saving yourself money is to come to a workshop, and that's one of the breakout sessions, hands-on breakout sessions, how to build a hoop house. And we just had 200 people this past weekend at Growing Power from around the country, and they learned how to build hoop houses, how to do composting, vermicomposting, how to do bees, how to raise mushrooms. So we have like 8 breakout sessions, how to plan their farm. We take them through a very hands-on visioning process of how to plan their farm. And as I go around the country, some of these farms have started up, and people will bring out their project plan, their artistic thing that they did years ago, and their farm is exactly what they visioned it to be. So the process really works. Getting people together and working together and passing ideas is one of the more powerful things that happen at our workshop, to really get people energized and inspired to want to go out and start something, because we all have fears of going out and starting something. So I think the fears become less when people are together and talk about it and are getting training to be able to do this, because this is this new farming will be a very skilled art form. It won't be like, you know, row crop farming. It's going to be, how do we use every inch of space inside these high cost facilities, inside buildings? How do we look at farming instead of acres or hectares and look at it in terms of square footage?
Sarah, thanks for the call and good luck to you. And we'll be sure to put a link to Will Ellen's website, Growing Power, so you can check out more information on those workshops and such. We'll put that on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page and on our website as well. Scott in Chippewa Falls is with us. Hello, Scott.
Hello, good morning. Very, very great show. I appreciate it. Well, Will, I have a question for you as far as it has to do with, you know, potential policy change in composting, you know, on the edge of a city or something like that. if you could give any indications of the steps that a person should possibly go through. And then I was also wondering if there is grant opportunity. So let's just say if we were composting school lunch waste or things like that and other stuff added, and the concerns that the, you know, maybe the of smell or something like that.
Great question, because composting is one of the most difficult things to do on a mid-size or large scale, and that's what we really need. We need thousands of, we don't just need a few hundred yards of compost. We need thousands of yards, hundreds of thousands of yards of new soil to remediate what we've done to the earth. So to do that, there are different ways of doing it. Of course, on a smaller scale, backyard scale, you can do it in a 4x4 pallet situation that will produce a yard of compost, and that's about as small as you can go to get the temperatures up to 150 degrees to kill the pathogens and the weed seed in the compost. But there are ways, friendly ways of doing it in static piles, so you're not turning. Whenever you're turning a pile, you're going to kick up anaerobic smells that may drift off into the community. But the first line against that would be to engage the neighbors, get them involved, so they understand what you're doing. We do over 1 million pounds of compost, and we have houses 200 feet away at our national headquarters. They don't call the city and complain if when we're loading a truck or something and a smell may drift over. They'll call us and say, what's going on? And we tell them the smells will be gone in a few minutes, and off we go. Of course, the DNR controls composting in the state of Wisconsin, so you have to follow the DNR regulations to make sure that none of the nitrogen waste goes into rivers or streams and so forth. You have to have a certain amount of feet between where you're composting and certain size piles and so forth. But Wisconsin is one of the more progressive states in terms of composting. We're composting on in Oak Creek at the sewage treatment plant, where they had three large lagoons that they weren't using for, you know, like 20 years. So these were ideally set up. It's probably the best composting site you could possibly ever want, because it kind of smells down there already.
Right. Listen, we only have about a minute or so to go. I wondered if you could leave our listeners with some words about how they can become a part of the good food revolution.
Well, there's so many ways of being involved in terms of calling your congresspeople to change the national food policy, to get more funding in sustainable agriculture area away from commodity payments to large corporate farms. And with the price of soybeans and corn today, they don't need supports. But we need to change our policy in a positive way. We need to develop local food systems, and folks can support it in so many ways by purchasing food that's locally grown, going to farmers markets, helping to volunteer on farms if they don't want to grow food themselves, by growing food in their backyards and side yards, like I said before, by participating in some of these youth farms to make sure there's schools are following the protocol to get healthier food in the schools, because that's where some of the worst food is found. And we've been able to deliver a lot of food into through Sysco, who is the delivery system into most of our public school systems here. So we've been able to get our food into the Sysco system to go to the public schools, our microgreens and carrots and things like that. So and support your local farmers. Yeah. That are out there. We need to save our rural farmers that are under a lot of stress.
Well, it has been a great pleasure learning more about your good food revolution. Thank you, Will Allen, for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Will Allen is the author of The Good Food Revolution. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.